Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are talking about Season 3, Episode 4, Driving Test. And of course, I am here with someone who walks through life in really nice shoes, Stuart. Stuart, how are you?
If only that were the case. I have about 3 pairs of shoes that I go to, and that's it. Like, as if I have nice shoes. Why do I need nice shoes? Why does anyone need nice shoes? Wear comfortable shoes, everyone.
There should be a qualification of, if the shoes are nice, they also must be comfortable. They cannot be uncomfortably nice shoes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's ridiculous. The whole idea of wearing any shoes that are uncomfortable is just absurd to me.
Welcome to not being a man, Stuart. Anyway, we're also joined by someone who isn't a man, but also someone who has courage. Melissa. Melissa, how are you?
I'm great. I was going to say, me rocking in here with my radical feminist sweater, just like David here. Yeah. Welcome to not being a man, Stuart.
Yeah, welcome. I'm really excited to talk about this episode of Schitt's Creek. But before we do, we have to start the podcast off on a super high note.
That was a very Moira way of saying podcast.
Yeah, it was very.
We got a 5-star review, and as promised, I will read all 5-star reviews live on the podcast. So thank you so much, Dying with Embarrassment. The review says, love the show, great people, insightful commentary. P.S. 5-star review for Jess to read. Thank you so much. That's so kind. Also, I love the little reminder because they know that I have ADHD brand and can't remember shit. So that they're like, here, you have pretend. Don't forget to read it. I appreciate the reminder.
It. 2 out of 3 things correct. I'm not going to say which is wrong.
And Melissa, we also are up to 89 YouTube subscribers.
Whoa.
And this is like exciting for us. I was the most excited when we got to 69, I'm not gonna lie. And I was a little sad when we moved off of 69. But now that we're on 89, I feel like we really have to
follow Talking Shit right now.
We did joke about potentially trying to block people to see if we could keep it that way for a while. But yeah, we thought probably best not to.
Yeah. But now we have a new goal because we're at 89, which means we're only 11 away from being at 100. Mm-hmm. And just for you special listeners, if you get us to 100, if we get to 100 or exceed 100, when that happens, we promise to wear wigs on the podcast just for the one episode because it's hot, okay?
Yeah.
But we will wear sport wigs on the podcast that follows us hitting 100 subscribers. So make sure to go to YouTube, youtube.com/\ one of those slashes. I don't know which one's which. At Talking Shit is where you can find us on YouTube.
Yeah. Now, do you both own these wigs already or are you purchasing wigs for this?
Oh, Stuart's buying the wig. I told you which wig I was going to wear.
But I wasn't too sure if, because I found a good Moira-ish wig.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about one, and I'm like, that's Moira's wig. I'm wearing it. So, like, I'm ordering that. And it's cheap. Like, it's going to turn up. It's going to be ratty ass.
It's going to look really bad. Yeah. There's a wig in this closet that I'm pointing to on YouTube. There's a wig in there somewhere. I'm going to have to find it. I know there is one in there that I would be, that would be sporting. So yeah, that's exciting stuff to look forward to. So make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube if you want to see us wear wigs, which literally who wouldn't? So please do so. Anyway, Melissa, thank you so much for returning to the podcast. Please explain why you chose Driving Test as an episode you wanted to be on. I can't remember if there is a reason.
I don't think there was in particular. I think it was just, I was reading through. I am actually really happy having watched this episode to remember some of the conversation in this episode. I think it's a really great one. But yeah, I think largely, I believe it was just like a scheduling thing, but that's fine. Yeah.
I mean, but we're happy you're here because we can ask you questions about driving tests in Canada. So.
Absolutely. The other thing I was going to say, just to like tease already, I have already picked the episode that I want to be on for next season. And Stuart has no idea why, but I did already tell Jess, I was like, I want this one. So anyway.
You have no idea, Stuart. No idea what's coming.
I really don't. And this is the worst thing about this podcast is that I'm always kept in the dark. And I hate not knowing things that are out there.
I know.
I think it's
this
my
is,
favorite
this is
thing
torture. Yeah,
I know. Stuart, I feel your pain because Adam and Kevin are doing this to me now on Inside the TARDIS. Sorry if anyone could hear the cats in the background of my microphone. but yeah, anyway, I'm having the same thing happening to me right now. And they keep being like, oh, but this all makes sense eventually. And I was like, well, right now it doesn't. And I'm angry about it.
Perfect. Stuart, broad thoughts on this episode before we dive into the little recap.
We've been talking about recently where it seems to be like a bit of a Venn diagram going on of like comedy or drama. This one's certainly leaning more towards bigger circle in the drama kind of category. We get a lot of kind of good chat between Alexis and David, some really good insights into them. A bit more about like kind of, I guess, how the town council doesn't work, which I'm sure we'll get into. But there's an episode itself. I thought this was perfectly serviceable. Like, nothing really kind of complain about. I did say to you before when I first watched it, the vibe was a bit off. But now on a rewatch of it, I've put that down to the fact that I was half asleep when I watched it and fell asleep midway through.
I was going to say, it feels like kind of a normal episode to me. We get a few things though that we'll dive into, but let's do a quick little recap at the top of what this episode contained. The lesson of the week is nobody cares. Nobody cares that David's license has expired. And for some reason in Canada, that means he has to retake his driving test. Well, I suppose David cares. And also Johnny kind of cares too. But Alexis and David learn a little bit from one another this episode as David learns that people simply do not care about what you're up to. And Alexis learns that even while she was flitting from country to country, taking driving tests in burkas, David cared for her and worried about her well-being. Meanwhile, Moira and Johnny care about Stevie possibly selling the motel, though they care because it would mean they'd be homeless. Moira attempts to get some money from town council to help her out, but when that fails, she suggests that Johnny take on the motel as his next project, seeing as how he pretty much has nothing else going on. And by episode end, Stevie and Johnny are partners in the motel business. Very exciting stuff. Stuart, you had made a little guess last week that it was going to, in fact, be David who was going to be a partner with Stevie with the 40 grand minus 6 grand or so. So what did you make of Johnny becoming partners with Stevie?
Makes so much more sense. Like, I think that it gives Johnny something to do finally, which is really great. I think, and a dynamic that I never really considered was the one that came about from the very end where Stevie just like rushes him and gives him a hug of just like, oh my god, thank you. And it's like, oh, I see this dynamic going on here. She's gonna be almost like a surrogate daughter in a way, and he's gonna kind of get all that kind of fatherly energy that he doesn't really get from Alexis from Stevie. And I'm kind of here for it. I kind of like that. I think that kind of gives me the warm fuzzies. I love that we get a kind of broader kind of mix of characters like mingling together. Like Johnny and Stevie have had some really kind of funny scenes when it comes to him being the real kind of straight guy to Stevie not giving a shit about stuff, which has been great. And so to get more of that is going to be brilliant. I'm really not against this. I really love this idea.
Yeah,
Melissa, what do you think?
It's such a cute dynamic. I agree. Like that hug at the end. Honestly, there's like a few different moments like that in this episode of two characters having these like kind of little moments of connection. And because the Alexis and David one also really stands out for me. But I agree that this like Johnny Stevie dynamic, I'm so excited to see it going forward. There's such a fun like couple of personalities to play off of each other. And I think it was such a sweet moment for Stevie to really like let her guard down, right? She's got this like really tough exterior. She's, you know, doesn't seem to rely on other people easily. And this was her like really admitting, I have no idea what I'm doing. I need help. And Johnny answering that, right? Like to be vulnerable and then to actually have someone be like, it's okay. Like I can help you in this situation and not do so out of some charity to do so because it's like, yeah, no, this is like, this would be a good thing for both of us to do and I can help. I have this knowledge that I can impart and you don't have to be alone in this and we can keep this motel, which I think secretly, you know, kind of means a lot to Stevie. I don't think she wanted to sell it. So yeah, I love it. I'm all here for it.
Yeah, I especially love like the way in which this all goes down where it's kind of Moira's doing as a result of her not being able to get the money from town council that she's like, no, but John, you look so excited about this. You should definitely not drop this and take it on head first. Like, I think that's great. And I've been waiting for us to get here, Stuart, like simply because I feel like this is kind of the turning point for Johnny as a character. In terms of, he's had a really rough go the first two seasons, right? Like trying to find a job. Everyone else is like actively involved in things and he seems to kind of be floundering a bit. This is kind of the jolt that he needed because like he says, he does have experience running a business, not a motel, not necessarily the hospitality business, but he knows what a ledger is, you know, that's a start. He knows how to maybe do some of the paperwork side of stuff that Stevie doesn't know how to do. And I totally agree with you, Melissa. This duo, I really love in scenes together. I think I'm just excited for what's to come. And I'm not going to spoil anything for you, Stuart, but I love the Stevie hug moment because we don't get to see that a lot. And I view Johnny as like almost like a surrogate father for her in a way. And so I think getting to see that dynamic is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's great to give Johnny some real purpose. Like he's had some real stinkers of ideas when it comes to businesses. And so giving him a more traditional business to follow, one with that does kind of have paper ledgers and paperwork for like all the accounts and things like that, that isn't too modernized, I think it's going to kind of lend itself to perhaps Johnny's earlier days of setting up the business and stuff that he'll maybe like kind of slip into. So it's great to give him some like a proper direction. Yeah, can't complain. This is lovely.
Yeah, it's perfect. And I also love that it's on the heels of like we could be homeless, like, and yet also we're very concerned about the drip in the sink. So like I don't understand, Melissa, how they're hearing the drip. Like, are they must only be hearing the drip in their own bathroom because it shares a wall with David and Alexis's bathroom, unless they're like sitting in their motel room with the door wide open and Alexis and David's bathroom door wide open. How are they hearing this drip?
Yeah, that's fair. Because like my bathroom, it's the main spot where I can like hear my neighbor next door. And I think it's because like the vents of both of our bathrooms like must feed into the same system. So I feel like sound like travels through the vent that way. So like I think either one of us could probably hear when we're playing like music, when we're having a shower or something. So I assume that's what's going on. It also could just be a bit of like, I don't know, the roses being a bit delicate sometimes and being overly bothered by things.
No, so, you don't say. You don't very say. Possibly.
I mean, you say that as if it's really like unreasonable. I'm there thinking, I'm completely them. If I could hear even the faintest sound from a neighbor, I'm just like, what is that? What? And I go full, like I don't know what it is. I see red whenever I hear like noise from other people. It's really bad. But like stomping neighbors, anything like that, I kind of go crazy. My neighbors recently just had a baby, and thank God they're like three walls away from me, because like we've got a hallway in between us. So I'm like, I'm not hearing any of it, because crying babies would be the worst. But a dripping noise is repetitive. It can echo, especially if you can get like the pipes. It's this should be Stevie's top priority. I'm sorry, sort the financials later, fix the drip. And also, we've seen from like early episodes how bad drips can get in this motel. Like Johnny woke up soaking.
It's true. Yeah. Also, I don't know if in Canada or in the UK they had Angela Anaconda. Is this ringing? There is like a children's show named Angela Anaconda.
Was it like with the cutout like photos in South Park style? Yeah.
I think about when I hear about drips is there's this episode of Angela Anaconda where there's a drip in her bathroom and it keeps waking her up. And so it like the whole episode is about getting the drip fixed. And then finally the drip is fixed and then she can't sleep because there it's like, you know, that was like her white noise. So I don't know. It just reminds me of Angela Anaconda.
I think Angela Anaconda is the perfect show to like show our very slight age difference, Jess, because it was one of those shows that I like was aware of, but I don't think I ever watched it.
Just missed it. Yeah. So that's what Moira and Johnny are up to. He eventually does fix the drip. I don't understand how in fixing the drip, he swapped which side is hot and which side is cold. That seems kind of impossible.
Yeah, that's quite a feat of engineering, right? Because they're two separate pipes.
Yes.
So is Johnny like...
Is that how that works? I have no idea. I'm not a plumber.
I'm sure they must be.
From what I understand...
It's not heating up stuff in the tap, is it? It's like it's coming from... two different areas. It's got to be two different pipes. Again, yeah. I mean, I caveat the same thing. I'm not an effing plumber. Like,
I have no idea.
Say this, but I know. Like, it just seems like it seems wild.
I don't know. I had a leak under my sink, and I was just like, "Well, I have no idea what to do." And my partner was just like, "Oh, you just have to like play around with it and fix it." And I was like, "You say that, but like." Go and like he fixed it and it was fine, but I was like, I don't understand how to even approach that problem. Like, I would be desperately combing YouTube trying to figure it out, or I just call the property manager because that's why I rent and not own, because I don't have to worry about that stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would assume it was something like a broken washer or something, but that's as intricate of detail as I can get into. My bigger question is, why is Alexis keeping her hand under the piping hot water? She's like, ow, it's burning me. Move your hand. I'm actively annoyed with her.
Yeah. I was mildly related. Like, this was a little bit relatable just because, again, in my apartment, the hot water gets scalding. Like, it's shockingly hot. And I'm like, this can't be. There's got to be some rule about like how hot you're. What if there's
definitely
like a baby
there's a and, rule? You know? Yeah. Yeah, and they should turn it down because there's a way you could do it manually on like the actual like hot water heater.
I mean, we could like boilers in our individual flats here and stuff, so we can just adjust it ourselves. Is yours all like centrally managed?
Yeah, because it absolutely is, because it kept going out. Like, I have come home multiple times to this apartment and there's no hot water. And that's really great when it's 11 p.m. at night and you've been out playing winter frisbee for 2 hours. And that has happened to me again on like probably 7 or 8 different occasions while I've lived in this building. So finally they like, I think, fixed it for real and it has stopped happening. But yeah, it's some like central hot water heater system in my building, and
wild. Jeez. Yeah. Scalding is bad. Like, I've got, been to, like, pubs and things, and they have, like, warnings. And they're like, yeah, the water gets really hot. And then you turn it on, and it is, like, a kettle is just being poured out above the sink. And you're like, what the? How the hell am I meant to deal with this? Especially if, I know this is a common criticism of the UK, because we have, like, two individual plugs, one for hot, one for cold. And Americans come over here, and they're like, how are you meant to get, weird. Like, a reasonable temperature? And it's like,
what do you mean you, like, in a bath?
Yeah. Like two different taps.
In like sinks as well, like where you'd wash your hands as well.
It's weird.
I don't. It's a legacy thing of like old plumbing of like, because we have history. And so
I knew that was coming.
We have history. Yes, and nothing bad has ever happened in that history.
No, let's not get into that. It's fine. We just gloss over it, right? But yeah, you just have to like turn both taps on and then just do the shake between one and one and the other.
This is very strange and I don't like it.
She said through gritted teeth.
I just don't like it. Okay, well, moving on from that, we need to talk about Moira's time at town council in her attempts to like get some funding to the motel. It's just like so transparent. But my larger question is very specific, and it comes from one specific line where Bob brings up the fact that Gwen goes to the library to use their computer because she's worried about people tracing her IP address. And so my question is, what is she looking at?
Yeah. Yeah, that is very similar to my question from this scene where they were talking about how Moira didn't want to take sides in the war memorial. And I was like, what? War memorial? Like, what war are we referring to? In which, like, the sides are not really obvious. Because, again, like, Canada hasn't been in that many wars. And I feel like they were a pretty clear, like, good and bad. Other than the time that we burned down the White House, which was, you know, maybe just a different
war. I mean,
1812.
Are you a real country unless you've attempted to do that at least once or twice? Like, you've got to do it occasionally, right?
To be fair, technically it was your country that did it, Stuart, not mine, because mine wasn't really a country yet, but
But the, like, this whole podcast is, I think, not something that was anticipated when writing lines like this, in that they don't ever think that anyone's really going to think into them this much. Like, they just go, oh, that's quite funny with Gwen. Move on. But if this develops into a thing and it turns out that Gwen is some absolute internet fiend that's like, I don't know what she could be doing on the dark web, like whether she's trading guns or something. Like, Gwen could be an absolute fiend for this kind of stuff. Who knows? But I put it down to maybe that kind of old-timey, oh, I'm worried about people tracing my IP address because they heard it on TV and it's like some kind of techno babble that they think they understand.
That could be, that definitely could be, now that you say it, because I know people, I think my parents are baby boomers, I'm not exactly sure.
They should be.
Okay, I was gonna say, in that age range, I know people that are like who will not get things like, in New York it's called Easy Pass, I don't know what it's called other places, which basically is just like a thing that you could put money on to get on toll roads without having to like bring cash or card or whatever, because they didn't want, they're like, the government will know where I've been. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? Like, where exactly are you going? Like, are you committing murders and you're worried that they're going to catch you with your Easy Pass? So there are people who are like that, I guess. But, you know.
It's a strange thing of, like, what people do, like, kind of worry about when it comes to tech and, like, the things that they could be traced for. And you're just like, maybe you shouldn't be that worried, like, unless you've got, like, guilty conscience. Like, but then I love the fact that they worry about getting tracked through Easy Pass, but they drive around a vehicle that has a license plate and, like, can be tracked from cameras here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Odd. Yeah, I think it's funny. There's definitely, I think there's a certain point that you just hit where you're like, everyone knows, the government knows, everybody knows, has all my personal information. It's out there. It's, you know, it's being used by companies to give me ads and sell me stuff. It's being used by the government. I don't know. But I do think it's, I'm signing up for like a Nexus pass so that I can cross the border quicker. So like your, it's not just my government, your government will also have all my like access to my fingerprints and all this stuff. So, but yeah, every now and then I find there's this like funny, like thing with the technology. My mom used to like turn the data off on her phone anytime she wasn't using it. Cause she was so used to having like this very like limited amount of data. And I was like, if you're not like actively surfing the web or like watching videos or whatever, I was like, you could just leave it on. You don't have to like turn it off, like turn it on, send an email, turn it off again. Like every single time.
Oh, that sounds awful.
She was being so precious about it. I was like, it's okay.
I know. I remember those times though. Like there, I remember when I had a flip phone, like if I accidentally went on the internet, which I did occasionally, cause it would just, you'd click the wrong button. It would charge us on the phone bill. And I knew I'd be like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. I accidentally clicked the internet button again. So I get that. But yeah, times have changed.
Yeah. I mean, I still have that when I'm in the States. I like am just now finally signing up for a phone plan that gives me calling in the States just because I'm down there so much. But it was, I have this like, if you want to use your data, we'll just charge you this like one time daily fee, and it's like 12 bucks. It's like annoyingly expensive to use my own phone, but it's if I've occasionally like had my phone on airplane mode the entire time and then I cross the border, but my phone is still technically connected to like an American tower, and so it'll be like, welcome to America, and I'm like, I'm in Burnaby. I'm so annoyed, and then I have to pay 12 bucks for the day even though it was just like a second. So yes, I understand that moment of fear because it's happened to me so many times.
Yeah.
Oh, that's infuriating.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
All right, let's talk through the conversation between David and Alexis. I think this is a perfect encapsulation of their personality types, where even though Alexis expects people to adore her and shower her with, you know, gifts and adoration, she also understands that most people are extremely self-interested and just simply don't care what anyone else is doing. And David is me, who is a functioning ball of anxiety and is nervous at the drop of a hat and thinks everyone cares. And I guess my argument would be, Stuart, that maybe if nobody else cares, I care. I care. And I'm nervous about this driving test. How do you relate to David at all in these moments, Stuart?
I kind of related to David a lot in this episode. Firstly, mostly I'd actually say at the very beginning with the license expiring, because I'm not a car admin person. Like, that stuff can get in the bin. I hate doing it. We have to get our MOT every year, and every year I kind of leave it to the last minute because
every year
I'm the worst. Yeah, you have to get your car like checked to make sure it's road safe.
Oh no, that's an inspection. Okay, yes. So it's for the car, okay. Not for you.
Oh no, not for me. No. Like, once you're licensed, yeah, they don't give a shit. They'll just let you drive around and do anything. Until you're like 70 something, maybe 80. And even then, that like old people still just drive around and they can't see anything. They're just like
Ours is the same. Like, you have to get it renewed every like 10 years or something, but it's not like you don't do the test again until
we have to get our license renewed, but you just send off a form and then they'll just send it back to you and they're like, is your address the same? You go, yeah, blah blah blah.
Yeah, well, that's where I was confused, because in the US it's very similar to what you were saying, Melissa, where it's like every 10 years you need a new driver's license, Usually you got to take a new photo, whatever, whatever. But at least to my knowledge, if you were to let your license like lapse or expire, actually I did this once. It was an accident. I didn't have to retake the test like that. Maybe after a certain amount of time you have to, I would assume, like if it's been multiple years or something, but David's just expired, didn't it? Like, why did he have to retake the whole test? Is this a Canadian thing, Melissa?
So my guess is, so the way that it worked when I was taking my driving test, and again, it's like provincially different here, so I don't know what the rules are in Ontario. And I also don't know what the rules are now, but at the time we took the written test and got our learner's permit, and that allowed us to drive with somebody else in the car who had their full license. And there were restrictions on like how many other people you could drive and all this stuff. And then after a year or 9 months, if you like paid for driving lessons, and after you'd driven like a certain amount of hours, you had to like track all the hours you've driven, you could go for your end test, which was like your like new driver license. And then you could drive on your own, but you couldn't drive more than like one other person in the car. You can't drive after midnight. There's like all of these rules. And then you have that for 2 years. And then you can go for another driving test and get your full license. So my guess is that he had his N permit and that's what expired. So for that, yes, I think you would have to go and like redo the test again. I don't totally remember. This might be being a bit changed just for the comedy of it. Because I was very on the ball about getting my full license because I wanted it really badly. I like my parents tried to like be like, you don't need to learn how to drive. And I was like, no, I really do. We live in, you know, farmland where the buses are not good. And so like I've had my full driving test basically like as long as I could, which is 28 years now. 18 years now. I can do math.
I was going to say, Melissa, how old are you?
No, 18 years. It's fine. Still. But anyway, so that would be my guess, is that he sort of had the new license, but not his full license. And so there's like a test involved in getting it at that point. But yeah, anyway, I don't know. I've never failed my driving test also. This like repeated failing of the written test was very funny. I know it happens. I feel bad for people with like severe test anxiety, which David clearly has, but it's like really not that hard from what I remember.
Yeah, I did get the test anxiety. I did fail my first like practical driving test though. I was livid, because basically this show brought back up those feelings, because the exact same thing happened in my test. So we had a thing that was it was like a new thing that they had introduced called independent driving, where they will say, right, I want you to drive me towards this town or this location, and just you get us there and whatever. And so I was doing that, was all good, all cushy and everything. And then they kind of took back over and they go, right, now we'll like give you instructions of where to go. And I was like, okay, perfect. And he goes, make a turn. And I went, left or right? And he goes, I told you. And I was like, no, you did not, left or right. And also, you're meant to clarify left or right. And he refused to tell me. I got flustered and then was just like, right, okay. So pulled out, tried to do everything, and then, yeah, he failed me. And I was like, you son of a... And then when it came to having my second attempt at the practical, I went in for it, and I had the same instructor. And he was in such a better mood. And the only difference is that the first one was towards the end of the day, and the one that I had him for was the first one of the day. Which doesn't really kind of lend itself to the conspiracy theories that they have a set quota per day of failure rates. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I'm good. So, yeah, I was so angry, though. I was like, you motherfucker, I've got to drive to work next week.
That's wild. Yeah, I mean, there was the only thing I'll say about, like, because obviously it's different everywhere. And in the U.S., it's different state by state. But for us, when I took my driving test, where I lived, I could either go to like the DMV that was a more rural area, or I could go to the DMV that was like in the city of Albany. And everyone knew, no, you go to the one in the rural area. It's mm-hmm. less scary. Yeah. The streets are wider. Like, you know, it's just an easier way to pass. And I did pass on the first time, though. I will say I definitely screwed up. No, they didn't even make me parallel park, actually, which is kind of wild because I remember that was the thing I was most afraid of, mm-hmm. which asked me the last time I freaking parallel parked. Like, you just, I just don't have to do it where I live. It's super rare to have to parallel park. Yeah,
I was going to say.
Well, now I have a backup camera, too.
Yeah. It's very funny. My brother, whenever he comes to visit me in the city, like, refuses to parallel park. So he will drive around, like, for like a 10 block radius around my home looking to find somewhere that he could park. And then he complains to me about there being no parking available. And I'm like, there's literally parking outside. You just won't park there because it's parallel park.
It's too difficult.
I only had to parallel park behind a vehicle. Like I wasn't parking like between two vehicles. So I remember feeling like I got away with something on that one. But now I parallel park all the time. I was driving students the other day. I'm like coaching a university team, and we had to like switch practice fields, so I like drove a bunch of them to the new field, and I like parallel parked a car, and they were all like impressed, and I was like, yes, well, I did not get my license 2 years ago like all of you. I've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, parallel parking is the worst.
So suffice to say, yeah, sharing that anxiety with David, but back onto the conversation, I kind of am a little bit like David in that sense of like, I always worry what other people are thinking about me, but I can, like, Alexis is totally right in the sense that like people are too selfish or too consumed. But here's the thing that I don't think was fully addressed is that yes, a lot of people are like Alexis in that they are too consumed themselves to like see other people and like kind of care about that. But then there are those people that are just big balls of anxiety that do obsess over kind of other people, but they're obsessed with themselves and not others to like give a crap about other people. So Alexis was totally right in this conversation, which was endearing because I thought maybe she might kind of go down the route of giving really bad advice and then making the anxiety kind of build, and then we get David having a meltdown during the test, which I was really kind of dreading. But this was, in a weird way, quite sweet. But it was, sometimes you do have to just tell these kind of like truths to people that are having anxious moments. Like, you've just got to say, no, here's the reality of the situation, take it or leave it kind of thing. And I don't know, I don't know if it's necessarily the best.
It's so fascinating. I really love the conversation between Alexis and David. I love that he goes to Stevie before even considering asking Alexis for help. I think that's just like shows what David and Alexis's relationship is like, where sometimes you can be best friends with your sibling and sometimes you hate them. Like, it's, that's just the way it is. And I, you know, we get more of her backstories on like, oh, I have my driver's license in like a bazillion countries. And he's like, isn't that to transport people? She's like, I have a lot of people to move, David. Like, she's had these wildlife experiences. Go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, I was going to say, I have questions about this. So I looked it up. The Class F license that she has in Ontario is needed to drive an ambulance or any bus with seats for 10 or more passengers, but not more than 24 passengers, and not a school purposes bus carrying passengers. So I was like, is Alexis involved in like human trafficking? Like, what is she moving?
That's what I thought.
Certainly could be. I mean, I've got to say, I looked it up as well, but I looked up what an F class in the UK is. And I certainly don't think that she was using it for our purposes, which is agricultural tractors. So yeah. I don't know. She's got to be human trafficking, right? Like, that's the whole business that she was, I think, perhaps caught up in herself. Like, maybe she was trafficked, and then, I don't know, it's a way of getting out. She was like, I'll do a bit of trafficking and then I'll get out of it this way. But the whole, I love these stories that we get from them of just like the emergency passports, the colored contact lenses, all the different kind of like scenarios that she gets in. I love that Dan Levy loved writing these, and that is just kind of did one and then kind of wrote more and more and more. I'm just hoping, and I hope I don't get kind of disappointed faces here. I hope we get something of an Alexis flashback, or at least some more lore into this, because that ties it all up, because I love it. If it stays as these kind of throwaway comments, I won't be disappointed. But that would be the dream for me, is if we were to have, like, I don't know, a flashback, spin-off,
yeah,
something. Just Alexis doing Alexis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's
the only thing I will say is remember that this is a Canadian TV show with a Canadian TV show budget. So just, you know, just putting that information out there for you.
What? So I'm not going to see like Liam Neeson Taken style version just with Alexis. What? This is the worst. I quit.
Yeah. What's most interesting to me is that we find out that with all of this travel Alexis has done, it was always David who was concerned. It was always mm-hmm. David who took the responsibility of sending her things that she needed, and that it was pretty detrimental to their relationship, in that he came to, like, you know, she was a bit of a burden on both, like, you know, his mental health and his anxiety, and just, you know, having to send her things constantly. It was a lot for David. And I love Annie Murphy's tiny little smirk as she's looking out the window when she realizes that David, like, cared. He's like, I cared. It wasn't mom and dad. It was me. I was the one who was always scared for you. And her little smirk out the window, Melissa, is everything. Because this is what you, when you have a sibling, if you have a sibling, this is the kind of relationship you, like, kind of aspire to have, where it's like, yeah, you argue, but, like, that person actually deeply cares about you and, like, wants you to be okay. And I feel like Alexis has always felt a little bit of a distance between her and her brother, and not really knowing why. Similarly to what we got with Moira recently, she's not really understood why there was that distance there. And so to understand it was because he was terrified that something bad would happen to her, and, you know, because he felt like he cared more than she did. I just loved her little smirk outside. I loved it so much.
Honestly, I think this is an episode that you could show someone really randomly and be like, this is what Schitt's Creek is. And this is what Schitt's Creek does so well. Because I think that it was funny, but I also think that this conversation is just such a pinnacle in terms of, yeah, this, like, really intense dynamic, and but this very heartwarming and sweet outcome. And I think there's, like, two parts to this conversation, and I don't want to, like, I want to give each their flowers, because I love the initial conversation of, you know, you don't have to be so anxious all the time. Like, not everybody is thinking about you as much as you think they are. And this, like, back and forth where, like, David, Alexis is like, oh, I, you know, you don't have to worry. David's like, you've had everything just easy and handed to you. The line about I walk through life in really nice shoes. And then basically Alexis saying to David, like, you have also had it very easy. And David's like, no, I haven't. And it's one of those things where, like, I feel like they're both right. Like, I think Alexis is saying, like, you get things handed to you that lots, like, many people, you know, Alexis is well-traveled, right? Like, David gets things handed to him that so many people don't get. And at the same time, I think David has spent a lot of his time propping up Alexis and making sure that she has had things that she's needed and hasn't always kind of felt the full consequences of her actions. And so, like, I don't think either of them is, like, wrong in this conversation, which is so lovely, right? It's so great to get to witness a conversation between two characters, be like, I absolutely understand both sides of this conversation. And I don't think either one, from the perspective of that character, from the experience that we know they've had, I totally understand why that's their perspective of the situation. And then to go to the second half of it, where Alexis, I, you know, and I think it's kind of brave of her to say, like, it hurt me that you went to Stevie before you went to me with this, that you always kind of go to somebody else before you come and ask me for help. And this very lovely conversation where David said, like, it was, you know, this line that you called out, right? It was me. It wasn't mom and dad at home worrying about you. It was me. And I was the one, you know, and Alexis is like, what? I didn't need your help. And he's like, but you did. And I did help you over and over again. And yeah, this, like, smile at the end when she's feeling that, and an understanding that her brother has always had her back, even if their, like, actual dynamic has been tense, I think is so sweet. And yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I know for sure my brother would always be there for me, just in the same way I would for him. And, you know, it's something that I think is really important in like a good family relationship, right? And it's one of those things where, like, if people aren't doing that for you, they don't need to be in your life, right? Like, it's I think it should be the expectation, and it's just very lovely.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole conversation and the way in which, like you've pointed out, is that both can express their points and both can be right in the same kind of thing speaks to the quality of the writing for this that I've said continually that other sitcoms I don't think would do. They wouldn't have, they'd follow a very kind of simple writing trope route of having a kind of a side to take and a side to go up against. But for them to both express this, do it so in a way that they get out what they're feeling, but they don't do it in an attacking way. Like, it's not like, I did this for you, you owe me this. It's more, I did this for you because I care about you. And I do worry about these things. So that adds truth to what I'm saying here. That it's just good. It's just great, mm-hmm. good juicy writing. I love it.
Mm-hmm. They do a really good job at weaving comedy with emotional backstory and character development on this show. And it's really, that's a feat in and of itself. You only have 20 something minutes. Like, there's not a lot of time to be able to do all of that. And small scenes like this just remind me how good this freaking show is. I love it so much. Anything we missed before we go on to feedback and ratings? Anything from the episode you either of you wanted to bring up?
The beginning with them all kind of like having the jostling over who's actually taking the car out was just, we knew that was going to come at some point.
Yeah.
Like, immediately the moment they got the car. And I loved Moira leveraging her relationship with David and just being like, David, would you like to drive your mummy to town hall, please? I was just like, just such a manipulation. It's brilliant. Moira was just on top form this episode for being Moira.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out a couple lines from Stevie around the motel stuff. First, where she talks about that she's the owner of a very sad business with one underperforming employee, like, absolutely killed me. It was so good. And then later when Johnny's like, you know, it's that first idea. You just have to go with the first idea that comes to you. And she's like, well, I did think I could charge full price to the long-term guests. And Johnny's like, or the second or third idea. You know, those are the real keeper ideas. That it was just two moments that really made me laugh in this episode.
Yeah. Oh, I love it so much.
Also, Johnny's first attempt at fixing the drip. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with this man?
Put a bucket under it. Like, I don't understand. Maybe I guess then you'd hear it hitting the bucket. I don't know.
But
like,
this sandwich bag?
Yeah, it's going to be bad. It's going to explode or it's going to fall and then break open. And then you're going to have a whole spill.
Yeah. And David's test teacher, the DJ on the weekends, and his sounds was it too hardcore for this area or something? I was like, oh. We've all known an aspiring DJ or known of an aspiring DJ in our lives, I'm sure. They are all so the same. They're all cliches and I love it.
So funny.
In small town Ontario too. No one appreciates the sound, man.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some feedback. We heard from Jared, who says that in his opinion, a subtly good episode for Alexis. While you can't tell a person to just not be anxious, she gives David some mostly great advice, and Annie Murphy's sly smile at the end is perfect. Moira also has some great advice in this episode. We really are all just faking it. I mean,
lends itself, like, there's truth in the whole fake it till you make it kind of mantra. It's like, you believe in something and you start acting like it, and then things, I don't know, I hate to call it manifesting. I think that that's a bit too woo-woo, but I think there is an aspect of kind of generating stuff for yourself if you do act like it. Yeah, truth to that.
Certainly, especially in things like interviews, right? Like, confidence is just key. So even just pretending like you have everything is fine to a certain extent, I think is like really helpful. And I mean, listen, we all need to have a little bit more of this, as Moira says.
Cavage!
One more time?
Yeah, you got like half of that? Arsh!
Cavage!
Carage!
That pronunciation.
I couldn't not pull it. Because, like, I remember the first time I watched this episode, I was like, what did she just say? Did she say mirage? Like, what did she say?
Moira's like eloquence is becoming just one of my favorite things as well about this. Like, she drops some like really interesting words that even like I'm looking up and going, what is she on about? Like is it the largesse or something, like referring to the amount of money that they have to like give to the town council. Yes. Like, yeah, like she just drops these words out of nowhere. And again, to compliment the writing, I think a lesser sitcom would have it be wrong. Like, I think she'd use them out of, like, in the wrong context. But she used them perfectly because, of course, Moira is well-versed in great language. She's an actor.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. All right, let's get into our ratings for Simply the Best this week. Melissa, let's start with you. Who was Simply the Best?
Oh, man, it's tough, right? Because there's some really lovely stuff here. I'm really waffling. I think I'm going to give it to Alexis. And I think it's largely for, first of all, like the advice to David at the beginning. And then I think it's for basically like having the courage to then bring up like, hey, why aren't
I'm we sorry, wait, what did that? What did she have? The what?
Kavage.
Yes, that. To bring up why they aren't more close and to kind of be the initiator of this conversation at the end, because it's one of those where I just as easily could have given this to David for like the other half of that conversation, but just because she's the one that kind of brought it up in the first place, that's where I will go.
Mm-hmm. Stuart, what about you?
Alexis. I'm at the point now where I'm not even going to hide the fact that I think Alexis is my favorite character at this point. She, anytime that she's going to do anything good, I think she's going to get my MVP because I'm just, I adore her. She gives great advice. She looks great in a hat. She has a little smirk.
Perfect. The look from Alexis this episode was top tier. I love the hat and the color specifically of her lipstick. I think it is like very becoming. It's very like old style, like vintage beauty. I don't know. I just love it. I think she looks amazing in this episode. Yeah. I'm having a tough time. I really wanted to give my point. I was like so torn on who to give my point to because I think there are a lot of good candidates this episode. Mm-hmm. I am going to go with Johnny though. Hand waving the drip aside. I love him trying to encourage Stevie. Like, I think Moira just full on leaves the room when Stevie is crying. Like, it's not great. And not that Johnny does a whole lot better in that scene, but it's like, it's almost like he's awkwardly trying to comfort her. And I'm just really, I really love Stevie hugging him and just like the relief that she feels when he offers to be a partner. And like, if this ever makes money, you know, we could do it together. I also think he's like not so subtly great at being like, don't sell the motel. Like we need a place to live. So I want to give it to Johnny. I would have given it to Alexis if you both didn't give it to her. Cause I do think she also has like an incredible episode, but shouts to Johnny. Cause I really thought he was like very sweet this episode. So he's going to get my Simply the Best. As for Disgruntled Pelican, I feel like this is a tougher episode to give out a Disgruntled Pelican point on because no one does anything horribly, horribly offensive. Like, I'm certainly not going to penalize David because, like, he has test anxiety. I get that. I have test anxiety. You know, it's not fun. It's awful. And I understand where David's coming from. I think I'm actually going to take away a point from Moira and I feel bad doing it. But also, I think she's not nice to Stevie this episode. Like, she sees Stevie crying, and she's just like, oh, must be boy trouble. And then she, like, leaves. Like, I love the speech to the town council about John and I wrapped our arms around her, metaphorically speaking, of course.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, as she would ever hug a person. I just feel like she's kind of the weakest link, and her pretending that like she did such a great job in front of town council, like there were many questions, which shows engagement. Like, no, no, it was bad. It was really bad. And you're trying to like gaslight Johnny into thinking that like, oh no, this is actually great because this is a great step for you. Yeah, unfortunately it has to be Moira this episode. I don't like doing it, but she will be my Disgruntled Pelican this week.
I love the line from her of, we all know or are people that live at the motel. It's like,
yeah, it's ridiculous. Stuart, what say you?
I don't know. I mean, you make, I say I don't know. I've got a name in mind, but you've made some really good points about Moira, and I'm being swayed a little bit. But I'm going to stick to my gut, and I'm not going to give it to Moira. I'm going to give it to Ray. Because Ray was a predatory estate agent, or a realtor, as you may call them in the US. Don't try and get someone who is grieving and stressed to sell a property because you can make a quick buck on it. That's just outlandish behavior. It's horrendous. And as someone who is deeply at war with the London housing market, absolutely just the worst case. Like, I'm not going to tolerate this behavior. This shouldn't be allowed. Ray, Ray's getting it this week.
Wonderful. Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, I'm also going to say Ray. I debated Moira a little bit, but Ray was also where my mind went. This like line of his about, it's an excellent time to be selling a motel. Like, he's just saying that, right? He's mm-hmm. absolutely lying to Stevie through his teeth. And then even then, this like snarky line at the end of like, when this fails for one of the many reasons I've already said or whatever. It's like, get out of here, Ray. Go do something else.
Yeah. He was also like incredibly horrible to Johnny as well, and like was bringing out the fact that he like has no money, has no like experience, whatever. Then Johnny's like puts him in his place quite rightly, but I was like, Ray, this is really underhanded. Like, what are you doing, buddy? You're meant to be one of the good guys. I think I've given you MVPs before, Ray. Stop it.
All right, Roland. Wonderful. Well, Ray, you heard from us.
Stop acting like a disgruntled pelican.
Let's move on to our wig watch, although it isn't quite a wig we will be talking about today, Stuart. You have brought something to the table that you would like to discuss.
Yeah, so I was disappointed that there were no wigs. So I was like, well, I'm going to present something today. I just wanted to ask what your opinions were on the fact that Moira quite clearly dressed up like a horse in this episode with these shoes.
That's absolutely what they look like. That's so funny.
It's really horrendous. She has them. Yeah. They are full on hoofs. Yep.
Wow. She really does have hooves.
Yeah. I mean,
she looks like a satyr.
She does. I hardly know her.
Get out.
I won't.
But a wonderful, typical Moira outfit as always. But yeah, the business binder, like, she means business. Like, I love it. But I had to point out those shoes, because when I noticed them, I could not stop laughing. I think it's the angle here. You can't see like the back heels. They do look like hoops. But yeah.
At first I thought maybe they were those shoes that like don't have
ones that drag queens wear occasionally.
Are always terrifying to me. I don't understand the physics of that shoe.
I don't want
to. Couldn't be me wearing those. Nope. Okay, well, let's move on to, of course, tier ranking our episode of Schitt's Creek here. We have Hot Shit, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey for Me, Ew David, and Shit Out of Luck. Stuart, do you have any inclination as to where this episode belongs?
I do. I think, as I kind of pointed out earlier, I think it was good episode, like perfectly kind of okay episode. So I'm leaning towards Love That Journey for me. I'm not sure what you guys think. No?
I think it's too good for that. I think there's so much wonderful stuff in this episode. I think that this conversation, I think the Johnny and Stevie stuff, I think it's funny. I think this is at least a full bouquet.
Okay. Well, I'll lay it out like I usually do. We have the Stevie and Johnny storyline, which I think is quite good in terms of where we land, right? Like, it is like kind of a place marker of like, okay, this is when Johnny offered to go in on the motel with Stevie. I really love the David and Alexis stuff. I think it's really great in terms of letting us know what the history of their relationship is while also being really funny and relatable. So I really like that stuff. I feel like if we're gonna ding anything in this episode, maybe it's the Moira and town council stuff. Like it's fine. It's not like hysterical. It's like, okay. I would lean either top of Love That Journey For Me or bottom of Full Bouquet, I think is where I'd land. And maybe pushing it over the edge is Alexis's smirk. Like maybe for me, that would tip it into Full Bouquet. Cause I just love that teeny tiny moment, you know?
I can certainly be swayed towards Full Bouquet. I think, yeah, it's a good episode. Like, it's the thing. I always kind of get a bit odd when it comes to our rankings because I think my measurement scale, like, changes every time we do this. Because I'm just like, I think Hot Shit has to have me, like, rolling around laughing the whole way through. Or it has to have something, like, super dramatic happen. And I don't feel like we had either of those.
No.
But again, I don't want to kind of say that Love That Journey For Me is necessarily bad. I think like being...
It's average.
Yeah, it's like a good, like, because I think that like we are having to kind of grade these and that like an average episode for this show is a good episode. But I think you mentioning the town council and like saying that it wasn't necessarily the best kind of thing has kind of swayed me more towards Full Bouquet because I really enjoyed it. But like the weird, like the throwaway lines, like the kind of like Moira not being able to decide which, not wanting to choose sides with the war, the IP address, Ronnie admitting to like lining the floors of the new pulp mill. Like it was just those stupid absurdities, which I kind of love. So yeah, I'm pulled over. Yeah, let's go Full Bouquet.
Okay, so we're going to have Driving Test falling into Full Bouquet. We're looking pretty good. We're looking pretty even. Four episodes in, we have one episode in Hot Shit, two in Full Bouquet, and one in Love That Journey For Me. So we're looking pretty good so far for season three. I'm liking it. All right, well, that means next up, next week, we have a new episode, season three, episode five. Stuart, are you ready to hear the title?
Always.
Rooms by the Hour.
We're getting some business. Oh, wait, no. They can't do Rooms by the Hour. That's going to be... Who's going to do the cleaning? That's going to... no.
Well, Johnny is now doing the plumbing, so...
A lot of people might be doing the plumbing. I'm just going to say. That honeymoon suite is going to get booked.
So that will be next week. Thank you so much, Melissa, for coming back and joining us again on the podcast. And I can't wait to talk about next season when you're on, because I'm really, really excited for that episode already. But in the meantime, where can people find you if they want to hear more of what you got going on?
Sure. Yeah. Over on Whirlwind Podcast. So Whirlwind Pods on social media, whirlwindpodcast.com. We're doing a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm talking Doctor Who on Inside the TARDIS. I am talking Veronica Mars. Jess and I were just on a podcast together talking about the book from the 90s, The Face on the Milk Carton, which it was very tangentially related to a conversation that came up on the Veronica Mars podcast. And then it spurred this whole other conversation about everybody else who remembered this book for some reason. So yeah, that was really fun. So check that out. Lots of other stuff going on over there. Pushing Daisies, previous Little Liars is back. So that's always a fun time. So tuning in with Todd and Tommy, they just did Over the Garden Wall, which is like Tommy's favorite show. So I'm so excited to hear him talk about it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to watch that show. It's so good.
Yeah. So, check out Whirlwind Pods and
Anything new from you, Stuart? Anything you want to plug? Anything you got going on?
Nothing to plug. Just to update people on my binge watching. Went through The Leftovers in 3 days. I'm not okay. I'm still thinking about it.
Should you be? After binging that show in 3 days, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. I don't know. I came out of it and I was like, there is some semblance of hope, but I do feel quite bleak. Lovely. What to watch next? And then just started looking up what to watch after The Leftovers. So I have a list of that. But yeah, nothing really to plug. Find me on socials, Stuart Drinks Tea. Harass me on there.
There you go. You could find us at Talkin' Shit. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review so I have to read it on the podcast. And also, don't forget to go subscribe to us on YouTube if you want to see us in wigs. In the meantime, you could find me at The Just Sterling. I'm also over on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, talking through Buffy, talking through Felicity. We got a lot of fun stuff happening over there. But until next week, this is where we say warmest regards
and best wishes.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for 100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get 100 off a cocktail maker when you spend 400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.